Welcome to episode 22 of SK Wealth Solutions and Knowledge Show, where we take an integrated approach to your financial lives. My name is Matt Neeland, and I'm the Chief Investment Officer at SK Wealth. Today, I'm going to have a discussion with Mac Richards, a financial planner here at SK Wealth, regarding concentrated stock positions and how you get there from equity compensation to inheritance and so forth. It's an interesting topic because it's not just for the so-called wealthy. It can be something where it could be a $10,000 portfolio all the way up to a $10 million and plus portfolio. So there's a lot of different situations that occur where you could be facing this. And we're going to talk about different ways that it can happen and talk about different issues and solutions that you could address during this situation. So first off, Mac, what does it mean to have a concentrated stock or equity position in a portfolio?
Thanks, Matt, for having me on today. So, you know, we're talking about concentrated stock. People are going to have different thresholds of what they're comfortable with. So, you know, it may be 5% of an overall portfolio for some people. It may be 20 for another person. And it also depends on if someone's just starting out or if they're a seasoned investor. You know, if you're 18 years old and you're opening your first brokerage account, you may only have one or two positions in there. But for most of our clients, I think we like to see it any one position below 5% of their overall investable assets. But again, it's going to vary depending on people's particular situation. What I would be interested in is, you know, talking about how do people end up in this situation, like you mentioned. You think about generations ago, let's say, you know, my grandparents' generation, they didn't have the same access to information that we have today. You're not opening up your iPhone and getting a stock quote right there. You know, it was a little more difficult to really get that. So they weren't trading as much. They didn't have as much information. They probably weren't doing as much mutual fund or ETF investing. So a lot of it was just buy and hold. So what you're seeing now is as that generation is leaving inheritances to, you know, let's say my generation or the next generation, a lot of that is in the form of individual stocks. And now that turns into concentrated position. And, you know, I see in my own situation where my grandfather, he was a buy and hold investor and is pretty much entirely in Lowe's stock. I don't know how he landed on this. It may have been a shot in the dark. He may have done some analysis on it. But now you've got 13 grandkids that all have concentrated positions in Lowe's stock. And we're all wrestling with, all right, how do we trim this down and make it a little more palatable to our investment portfolios? You also see things where, you know, when a child's first born, the grandparents or the parents want to help out and get them invested, but they'll buy something that they see as a good stock. Same thing, buy and hold. It could be Disney. It could be usually it's a sort of a blue chip company that they know and trust and think is going to be around for a long time. But from when the child is born to when they're 18 and they can take over the account, you have almost two decades of growth in that one particular stock. So that's another way that we see that become a large part of someone's portfolio, especially when they're starting out. And I think you would probably agree with this is that the most common way we see concentrated stocks become an issue in someone's portfolio is when they're working for a company and they're getting paid through stock options, restricted stock units, something like that. And it quickly can add up to a very large concentrated position.
It's funny because a lot of people think, and we run into it with clients, that you're working for a company, and it could be a public company, could be a private company, and you're accumulating that as part of your compensation. And then sometimes you feel, am I being disloyal if I sell some of it? And so they just end up keep accumulating it over and over.
I spoke with this client at a previous firm years ago, and you know, she worked for Microsoft leading up to the dot-com boom. And she was a strong believer in Bill Gates. She loved what he was doing, where the company was going. And she said exactly that. She felt like she would be disloyal if she sold any of her stock. Well, then the dot-com bubble happened. She took about $1 million loss on that stock when she decided to sell. So, you know, it's not our job to say you're not being loyal or disloyal, but it's our job to kind of put the facts and the numbers in front of clients and guide them to a decision that they're comfortable with. But it could be maybe they're feeling like it would be disloyal, or maybe they're just so entrenched in the day-to-day operations of the company or their particular business unit within the company. They see things that are going well and they see where the company could be going because maybe they're seeing the strategic plan, they're seeing goals being hit. But that doesn't change the fact that it still can cause issues. And even if the company is doing well, you don't know if the next competitor is coming in, if Amazon is going to take over whatever sector your company's in, or there could be, who knows, an accounting scandal, a scandal with the board. There's so many issues that could impact a company stock, a global pandemic perhaps. So you never know what's going to happen. And I think you need to weigh those options with a feeling of loyalty.
When you go through with a client who comes in, a new client, and you notice that they have a large concentrated position, what is the kind of the first step that you talk to them about?
We like to figure out if this was intentional, if they made a conscious decision to say, I like where the stock is going. I understand it's a large part of my portfolio, but I believe in what we're doing and I'm okay with that risk. A lot of times that's not actually the case. A lot of times what we're seeing is, let's say you have restricted stock units and they vest once a year. The first year goes by and you don't have a plan in place. And that's really what it comes down to. If you don't have a plan to actively trim these positions and manage them, and manage the risk, then they just start to accumulate. And all of a sudden, a year goes by in the blink of an eye, and now you have another vesting unit. And if you are getting these grants every single year, it can quickly add up. It's a nice problem to have to get all of this equity compensation if the company is doing well, but you still need to manage the risk. You need to manage the taxes that go along with it. And the longer that you delay implementing a plan, the larger the problems are going to be. The larger the headaches are going to be. It's got the name endowment effect, is you just value something more because you have it. So if you think about, if you go to a trade show, you really didn't need this pen or tchotchke, but now that someone gives it to you, you kind of want to hold on to it. You don't want to lose it, even though it wasn't valuable at all to you before you had it in your hand. It's the same thing that we see with these equity-based compensation plans. Someone wasn't ready to go out and buy a bunch of shares of the company that they work for, but now all of a sudden it gets dumped in their account and they say, you know what? I have it. I might as well hold on to it, even if they didn't really find it attractive before that.
One of the ways that this can occur is through inheritance. Could you describe what the other choices are that it could be, like restricted stock units, kind of what they are and what it means to be granted stock options?
Let's start with restricted stock units, RSUs. So this is pretty much, as long as you stay at the company, you're going to get these shares. And they may say, all right, Matt, you get 100 shares of company stock and it's going to vest over 4 years. So every year you get another 25 shares of that stock that you can sell. You can do whatever you want with. The remaining 75 shares are unvested, meaning you can't do anything with those. But as long as you stay with the company, you'll get them. And then each year you get another 25 shares. But let's say you get 100 shares granted to you year one. And then next year you get another 100 shares granted to you. And the next year, another 100 shares. So you can see how it can quickly add up. We have stock options where, let's say they give you the option to buy the stock at $10 per share. And then it's up to you to monitor the stock over the years. And if the company does well and the stock goes up, you can actually buy it at a discount. There are tax implications involved that we take into consideration as well. You can buy through the 401k sometimes or an employee stock purchase plan, ESPP. And some companies offer a discount and they say you can buy the stock at a 5 or 10% discount. And you may say, all right, that's pretty attractive. But if you are already getting RSUs or stock options, that's only going to compound the issue of having so much of this company stock within your portfolio.
History is dotted with all these situations where somebody stays at a company and the next thing you know, something goes wrong and the company becomes worthless or loses a significant amount of value. And what they thought they'd had as a future has drifted away very quickly. And the risks of having that concentrating position adds to that. Another big issue I don't think people talk about a lot and we don't think about is the tax issues surrounding this. There's the good and the bad, but what are some of the tax issues that we really have to think about and you help clients with through tax planning?
That's going to come down to how they're actually getting that equity compensation. So if a client is getting RSUs, when the shares are vested to them, they are taxed as ordinary income. So the client could go ahead and sell them right there and there's no additional tax implications. And that's usually the best way for RSUs. Now with stock options, it gets a little trickier. You have incentive stock options, you have non-qualified stock options. I don't want to get too in the weeds on that, but there's certainly going to be certain things to think about. And again, the longer you let these stock options and stock units grow and vest without having a plan in place and implementing a plan, the larger the problem becomes. Now, if it's within a 401k, you really don't have any tax issues to worry about because anything within the 401k is going to be tax deferred and any buying and trading you do, you're not going to be taxed on. There can be situations where you have so much company stock within your 401k where there's potential favorable tax treatment on that. but that's going to be rare situations. And so there's obviously going to be tax issues, but it depends on how you're getting the equity compensation. What I would like to flip to you, Matt, is what do you see with risk in the portfolio when it starts to become such a large portion? And what are your recommendations for clients to manage that?
We do run into this quite a bit. You would be surprised at how often this happens, but it could be something as simple as an inheritance. And you know, your grandparents give you a gift and you feel, you know, as opposed to being loyal to the company, you feel you're being loyal to your grandparents in a sense and saying, I never want to sell this position too. So what ends up happening is we have to find ways of dealing with that. And in some cases, the simple answer is, okay, we can just trim some of the position over time and say, okay, we can keep a position. It's kind of saying a legacy position we want in the portfolios. For instance, in our trading system, we put it and can put in a do not sell so it can lock in so that position could be there forever if the client wishes that. From an investment standpoint, you know, the old cliche, you don't want the tax tail wagging the dog here. But at the same time, we really have to think about the tax implications. Could you just explain to everybody the difference between regular income tax versus if they sell a security and recognize a capital gain?
We essentially have two different tax brackets that we're dealing with, ordinary income and capital gains. So ordinary income, that's going to be your wages. You're working for a company. It goes through your paycheck. That's taxed at ordinary income. It's a graduated schedule. So the more income that you have, the higher your marginal tax bracket will be. Capital gains, it's a little more simplified. You may have a 0 or 15 or 20% tax bracket, and that sort of ties in with how much income you're earning as well. So we look to take advantage of lower capital gains tax brackets whenever possible. And if we can have someone hold on to a position for a year or longer, and then where they get taxed on that stock trade, it's taxed at a capital gains rate as opposed to ordinary income. Because if you hold a stock for less than a year, you're taxed at that ordinary income as opposed to the capital gains.
That brings me back to some different strategies with the keeping in mind the tax implications. So from a tax standpoint, it's every year. So every calendar year is a new tax year. What we look to do in some situations is we'll say, okay, let's sell a little bit, for instance, in 2020. So we recognize the gain during that period of time. So we get to diversify a little bit. We get to diversify our tax liability during that period of time. Then we roll into 2021, and anytime during that year, we could sell another portion of the portfolio and recognize a certain amount of gain during that year. So it's something that takes time to do, but it's a very reasonable thing. And you're accomplishing those two goals, limiting your tax liability and also slowly diversifying away from a concentrated position in the portfolio. You can help speed that up a little bit is do what we call tax loss harvesting, where we're looking in the portfolios. And if there's somewhere in the portfolio that we have some losses, we could recognize those securities as well, recognize those losses, and that helps offset some of the gains you're recognizing and selling your concentrated position. In some ways, if that's the case, this year in 2020, unfortunately, with the pandemic and the market reaction there was quite a few tax loss harvest opportunities that we took advantage of. And so for people who were having this plan of diversifying away from concentrated position, we were able to speed that up a little bit and sell more during this type of an environment than we would have in other environments. I'll switch back to you to explain, Mac, the concept of gifting shares or gifting an investment and what that really entails.
There are a couple ways to think about it. We've got the holidays coming up. Instead of just giving them cash, let's say you've got a grandparent that every year gives a few $100s, or just some cash to the grandkids. Why not just give them a share of the company or a couple shares of the company? And that way, you know, the kid has an investment, but then the grandparent also doesn't have to pay any taxes when they sell that because they transfer it over to the grandkid. Another gifting to think about, which I think people think about more commonly, is charitable gifting. Same thing. Let's say every Sunday you're going to church and you're putting money in the donation basket. Well, that's already money that you've been taxed on. Why not donate instead of cash? Why not donate stock to the church, whatever organization that you're actively donating to? Because then, again, you don't have to pay any taxes on those accumulated capital gains that are embedded in your portfolio, and you get a tax deduction for the amount that you are gifting to them. So there are a couple ways to do this. You could outright gift it to the charity. You could look at a donor advised fund. That's where you take your assets, you put them in a fund, and you get a tax deduction up front. And then over the years, you can decide which charities you send it out to. You could look at a charitable remainder trust. So this would be for someone that's probably either in retirement or a little closer to retirement, kind of has their plan in place. I wouldn't recommend this for someone who's younger and just starting out getting paid in equity compensation because it's irrevocable. So you put it in a remainder trust, which means you're going to get income from this trust either for your entire life or for, you know, let's say a term of 5 or 10 or 15 years. So you get a certain amount of income from the trust. When you pass away or when the term ends, whichever option you choose, that remainder, whatever's left in the portfolio, goes to the charity that you picked. So there are a couple ways to go about this. Again, whether it's to family or friends or to a charity, either option, you're not going to be taxed on any of the gains that you have in this concentrated stock position. So it's a great way to get out of your portfolio, especially if you're already actively gifting to friends or family or charities.
Some people, I don't think they realize the fact of gifting appreciated shares of anything, you know, a mutual fund, stock, or anything is a great way to make a donation, and you kind of get a double benefit out of it as well. Another thing that I think some people hear, some Wall Street firms, some brokers, firms tout this, and I think it will continue to be refined, but there's a type of strategy with concentrated positions called exchange funds. Some people hear the term swap funds. They're limited partnerships or limited liability corporations. So it gets a little more complicated from that standpoint. But what it is taking a position. So you're taking your concentrated position and exchanging it for like a basket of stocks. So you could take ABC company stock, put it into this exchange fund, and then you get the benefits of a diversified, say, an S&P 500 portfolio during that time. So you get the advantage of going from a concentrated position to a diversified position. There's caveats there to how this works. In theory, it sounds great, but in reality, you know, it's a little bit more difficult and things you need to keep in mind. You get the benefit of diversifying your tax treatment if you hold it for 7 years. But if you start taking withdrawals out of it prior to those 7 years, you're going to basically pay for the gains, you know, that you had. So you kind of defeated the purpose of putting it in that exchange fund at the same time. And it becomes an illiquid transaction to some degree because of that 7 year lockup that you're dealing with too. There's additional fees that you're going to have to deal with as well. You're talking about, because it is a limited liability partnership or limited liability corporation, you're talking about the documentation that you have to go through. And some of them are also requiring that you become a qualified investor, which means you have a minimum of $5 million in order to do that. So there's a lot of things there, but it's something, you know, we're always happy to, you know, to review these. And I said, they'll continue to be refined more and more. But if you hear that and you have questions about that, you know, happy to help you through that process. Getting back to also how we would treat things and how to think about things if you have this position in your portfolio. We've talked about from a tax standpoint, slowly trimming them and so forth. But in reality, there's situations too where you have to realize that there's no quick and easy fix. At the same time, you may have to have this position in your portfolio for a while. And as Mac, as you were saying, I think it's really true that some stocks that were purchased years ago versus that was an economy, a totally different economy than it is today. Those positions may not be as attractive as they were, you know, when originally they were purchased. So there's a lot of things to look at. But what we do too is we incorporate them into the portfolio so that if there is a position that fits into a certain criteria or a certain sector, we incorporate that in and say, okay, that's part of the portfolio. We're going to build the remaining portfolio around that. So it helps mitigate the overall risk impact of a concentrated position. There's a few ways to do that, but it is an option there as well. And the other thing that we can do too, you know, as you talked about, sometimes you're sitting there and the world is great. You know, you happen to, you know, get a position, you know, either inherited or through work compensation, and everything goes great and the stock goes gangbusters and you're worried about protecting that value. It's one thing to talk about diversification, but, you know, as we talked about before, you don't want to be caught in those situations where disaster strikes. There is a number of ways that we can put orders in to protect your downside risk, but allow the upside performance of the stock. So it gives you that peace of mind too, knowing you have the concentrated position, knowing it's a big part of your financial plan, but at the same time, you want protection against the unknown or bad situations. There's a lot of different things that we can do in order to manage through this. It comes back to kind of the phrase that you said earlier, is that devising a plan is so important when you're faced with this type of a situation.
It's our process to integrate financial advantage. And we call it that for a reason, because we're integrating everything that comes into play in someone's financial life. And it's all intertwined. You know, someone that is getting compensated through stock options, stock units, they may just think, I'm going to hold on to this and the company's doing well, and I want this to grow as much as possible. And that's the best thing for me. But just in a short conversation, we've hit on taxes. We've talked about possibly gifting through charities and trusts. We've talked about managing a portfolio around a concentrated position. So there's so much more to it than just watching the stock grow and hoping it grows and hopefully your portfolio grows. So that's why I'm really excited about our process, how we work with clients. It's really beneficial and it's exciting to see this all come together. And it all comes down to, you're exactly right, having a plan in place. Because when you don't have a plan in place, especially when you have equity compensation, you know, things can get out of hand pretty quickly. And I think we hit on it briefly earlier, but if you are working for a company, you're feeling loyal, and we've all heard the stories where things don't go as planned. You know, I'm thinking about Enron. Not only is your retirement portfolio up in smoke, but now your income's gone as well because the company's going out of business, people getting laid off. So that's kind of a double whammy. Usually if you were to be out of a job, you would want some sort of investments to fall back on. But if you've just been saving in company stock this entire time, now you found yourself in an even worse situation. So it absolutely comes back to having a financial plan, reviewing it, sticking to it, and just adjusting when things require that.
This has been a great discussion, and it really spans a lot of different situations. Whether you wake up one day with an inheritance of a position and you thought that was going to be something that you would use for a car purchase, a home purchase, paying for college education, or as you described, getting this through your company compensation. You know, it's all important to have that plan in place. So this was a very important discussion, and you know, we're always here to help and answer questions regarding any of these type situations that occur. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of SK Wealth Solutions and Knowledge Podcast. We're available on all of wide variety of podcasting sites. We have links to the episodes on our website, skwealth.com, or our other sister company, Sansevieri's website, sansevieri.com. Thank you very much.